I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. One of the first things Philadelphia's new mayor, Jim Kenney, did this year was propose a tax on sugary drinks to raise millions of dollars to send more kids to pre-kindergarten. His plan adds a 3 cents per ounce tax on sodas, on energy drinks, sports drinks, iced teas, anything pre-sweetened with sugar. So a 20-ounce sugary drink would cost an additional 60 cents. City Council debated the tax last week, and it's clear a number of the members are not sold on the plan. They had their own ideas to raise revenue, including a container tax. The vote is scheduled for next month. Meanwhile, the ad wars are underway. Here's one produced by Philadelphians against the grocery tax paid for by the American Beverage Association.
Philly is considering a new tax on beverages like juice drinks, sports drinks, sodas, teas, and energy drinks, with some of the revenue going to fund pre-K. But there's a problem. Economic experts say the tax will result in a 55% decline in beverage sales, while soda consumption in the U.S. is already at a 30-year low. This tax puts the pre-K program in jeopardy before it starts. That means important promises to our kids that we can't keep. We want better education for our kids, but this isn't the right way to do it.
Philadelphians for a Fair Future, with funds from former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, just released their ad.
Philadelphia's chance to help lift our children with citywide pre-K is now. The Daily News called out titans of the soda industry for misleading attacks on Mayor Kenney's plan to fund pre-K throughout Philadelphia and community schools that give our kids real job training. The Inquirer says Kenney's plan will help lift our children out of poverty to compete with the suburbs for good jobs. This is how we get there. Paid for by Philadelphians for a Fair Future.
Well, on Radio Times today, round two, as we discuss the tax on sugary drinks. Here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Jim Engler. He's the deputy mayor for policy and legislation for the city of Philadelphia. And Jim, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is Lauren Vitas. She's an attorney who represents the Philadelphia Beverage Association and Philadelphians Against the Grocery Tax Coalition. And Lauren, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be here.
Jim, let me begin with you and just begin with what was discussed last week in city council. This idea of a possible container tax. Is the mayor in any way going to move off where he stands today, this tax on sugary drinks?
No, we still think that the sugary drink tax is the fairest way to fund the initiatives that the mayor has talked about. It all starts with those initiatives. We were talking about expanding access to quality pre-K, creating community schools which provide social and behavioral supports for kids, and also making a major investment in our parks, rec centers, and libraries. And all of that can be funded by the sugary drinks tax. We don't think that the container tax, because of what it's levied on, when you're talking about bottled water and fruit juices and the like, it's not as fair and doesn't provide as much opportunity for people to make better choices.
Lauren, you want to just weigh in on this, and then we'll move on to the sugary drinks tax.
Sure. I think the introduction of the container tax shows you that the council members have some real questions and concerns about the soda tax proposed by the mayor. I don't think the issue is with the programs that it's going to fund or it's proposed to fund, but the question is, how do we get there? How do we get there in a way that's sustainable? How do we get there in a way that's fair? And how do we get there in a way that doesn't unfairly hurt local businesses?
And why does the Beverage Association, though, oppose this tax on sugary drinks, knowing that there are alternatives?
Knowing that
diet drinks. Non-sugary drinks.
It's still a regressive tax that's targeting the beverage industry. We think there are better ways to get there than the container tax or the soda tax.
Why the soda tax? I mean, there's so many things that have sugar in it, Jim. Why the sugary drinks tax?
Yeah, so we looked at a range of options to raise revenue to support the programs. We worked for several months, even leading into the administration, on the programs that the mayor wanted to implement that would really make a dent in Philadelphia's 26% poverty rate, because we know that that's what holds us back in such a significant way. We looked at various options. We looked at real estate taxes that have been raised 4 times in 6 years, sales tax, which had been increased, cigarette tax, which had been increased and then requires additional legislation from the General Assembly. And we looked at the sugary drink tax as the fairest way to fund all of the programs, and to do it in a way that still allows consumers to make a choice. Where the tax is levied on distributors, it also doesn't have to be passed down to the consumer if they choose not to. So there are other options out there.
Well, let me pick up on that and go back to you, Lauren, because this is a tax on the distributors. And I guess the question is, what do distributors do with that additional right. tax that they have to pay?
No, and I think it's a little misleading to parse it as a distributor tax. When you look at the size of the tax compared to the cost of the product, in many cases, this is an over 50% tax increase. So you're paying more in taxes than you would for the product. So the idea that a distributor can absorb $5 in taxes on a case of soda that would sell for $4 is just, it's mathematically impossible. This is a tax that will be paid by consumers and small businesses.
And one of the arguments against it is that it falls largely on low-income members of the city. Is that true?
I mean, I think the issue is that it's a regressive tax in the fact that if you are a low-income person, you are spending more of your income on your groceries than somebody who is making more money. And it's going to fall more squarely on lower-income communities.
And let me go back to you, Jim, because we are talking about 3 cents per ounce. So again, as I said in my intro, a 20-ounce Coke or Pepsi would be an additional 60 cents.
And that's, again, if the tax were to be passed fully on. Again, you're talking about companies like Coca-Cola and Pepsi that have moved their international headquarters outside of the United States in order to avoid paying federal taxes as well. So I think it's also a little disingenuous to label this a grocery tax because we are taxing attempting to tax sugary beverages, which
– You're saying that's not grocery?
I wouldn't consider that groceries. People can – choose different options. There are other items that even these companies provide and distribute, whether they're diet sodas or their bottled water or other beverages that would fall outside of this tax.
Well, let me pick up on the grocery thing. And this is not the first time, Lauren, I've heard that that's misleading. People hearing, and they heard that advertisement, believing that maybe you'd have to pay additional tax on your lettuce or toilet paper or Kleenex or anything else you might buy at the grocery store.
Right. And I think there's two reasons why we feel very strongly that this is a grocery tax. Number one, it's not just soda. We've been hearing a lot of the soda tax, and it's not a soda tax. It's a tax on sports drinks, teas, a variety of products. It's not me to say what someone's grocery cart looks like. The second piece is the idea that the mayor even raised that this is a tax that could potentially be spread on other products. So a retailer is going to have the choice of whether to put it on milk, on bread, on eggs, on things that we consider grocery staples.
But because the mayor said that is possible?
It's possible because once the tax gets passed on to the retailer is going to have to decide how to absorb it.
And I think we go back to the same discussion about how this tax is levied on distributors and on the corporations behind the sugary drinks. And it can be up to them that they don't have to pass this tax along. This isn't a tax that any single retailer or consumer has to pay because of where it is levied.
There is a tax on sugary drinks in Berkeley. In Berkeley. But it's a much smaller tax than this.
Yeah, it's 1 cent per ounce in Berkeley. There's also an attempt right now in several other cities, including San Francisco and Oakland, to put this a tax of this nature on the ballot as well. So it's something that you're seeing in a lot of major cities. In San Francisco, it was attempted at the same time the Berkeley tax was. And in San Francisco, it got over 50% of the vote, but they needed 2/3 of the vote in order for it to be implemented. So they're going to try and do that again.
But do you think, as Lauren said, that this could migrate so that people are paying more for bread and milk and orange juice and things that would be classified truly as grocery?
I don't think so. I don't know enough about the business to be able to say definitively. But I would say that because of where this tax is levied on the distributors of beverages and on the companies themselves, it doesn't have to be passed down. This isn't a tax that any consumer has to pay.
Doesn't have to be passed down, Lauren.
And I think Jim's statement of the administration doesn't know enough about the business is exactly why there's so many questions being raised by city council about who's going to be impacted by this tax.
The business, this is a very profitable business. I mean, we can agree with that, Lauren, that people in the beverage industry make a lot of money. And a fair amount of money has been spent on lobbying, for instance, here in Philadelphia, totally legal, allowed to do that, which I guess sort of raises questions about a kind of David Goliath situation.
We've been hearing a lot about big soda throughout this entire debate, but what's lost is the fact that this isn't just about the beverage companies. This is about the small grocers in neighborhoods. I've been doing a lot of outreach to small businesses, and to sit there and talk to somebody who poured their life savings into getting their store up and running, and they feel like the city has come after them on taxes on every which way, whether it's cigarettes or all the taxes that Jim mentioned the city has raised. I think it's really unfair to paint this as David and Goliath when most of the folks who are worried about being run out of business are small, local Philadelphians.
What does the city do for them?
So we already do provide an exemption on business taxes for a number of small businesses. It's $100,000 of the company's receipts are exempted from business taxes. So that's one avenue. We also do a ton of outreach on commercial corridors and to small businesses to grow and diversify. So there are a number of things that the city is doing already to help small businesses. And again, I go back to the point that businesses would not be required to pay this tax. They're not required to collect this tax. It's a tax on the distributor themselves.
Which means directly going to the distributor, and whatever the distributor does would trickle down to a store front in Kensington, for instance.
If they were to choose to do that. But where the tax is levied, it's on the distributor, and the company may choose. And we saw in Berkeley, what happened was only about a quarter to a half of the tax was passed along in a price change. Also, what we saw in Mexico, who has a similar tax of this nature, a lot of consumers chose different options, especially in the first year of implementation. You saw a significant increase in the consumption of non-sugary beverages, which are not taxed, mm-hmm. and a decrease in the consumption of sugary beverages. So a lot of these retailers who are concerned about a drop-off will not see a drop-off in total sales. Consumers may choose other options.
What do you say to that, Lauren?
I say if you're predicating an entire tax policy and hoping that consumption goes down and you're trying to use that money to fund legacy programs, that you should be looking at a different tax to fund those programs. I think Jim's point highlights the serious concerns about using the soda tax to fund pre-K, to fund community schools, to fund park and rec remediation. When you look at the rates of that consumption's already going down in this country.
Right, and we heard that in the ad.
Correct. When you look at how quickly consumption rates are dropping and you're putting a tax on these products in a way that is essentially doubling the price, you're going to drive people not necessarily to switch to water or to switch to diet. You're going to drive them outside the city to buy their products. Philadelphia is not an island. One of the things that the administration, I don't believe their calculations, picks up on is the amount of border bleed that the city is going to experience once this tax goes into effect. You're going to have retailers, you're going to have consumers who are going to go outside the city to buy these products where they're not doubled in price.
I know you want to say something, Jim, but we're up on a break, and I'll give you a chance after this very short break. And we are talking about the sugary drinks tax here in Philadelphia proposed by new mayor Jim Kenney, talking with Lauren Vitas, and she's an attorney who represents the Philadelphia Beverage Association and a group called Philadelphians Against the Grocery Tax Coalition. Also with us, Jim Engler, and he's the deputy mayor for policy and legislation for the city of Philadelphia. And you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email. That email address, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with Lauren Vitas and Jim Engler about a proposed tax on sugary drinks here in Philadelphia. The idea is that revenue from the tax would pay for more kids to go to pre-K, for community schools, for parks, and other programs here in the city. 1-888-477-9499. Jim, you wanted to say something. Lauren was talking right before the break about people going outside the city to buy their sodas.
Yeah, sure. So the city did put in place some very conservative revenue projections based off of this tax, based off of the amount of the tax and the amount of sugary sweetened beverages that are consumed in the city. The city projected a reduced consumption of 55%. And even with that reduced consumption, we still project to bring in over $95 million a year from this tax. We also put in place a 10% non-compliance rate, which takes into account Lauren's fears about people surging over the border to purchase sugar-sweetened beverages, and the city has already taken that into account and still able to project enough revenue to support the important programs that the mayor has proposed.
The mayor and the administration isn't doing this for health reasons. I mean, I find that sort of an interesting argument, which is it's not that it's better for people not to drink these sugary drinks, but doing it for other reasons. What's the thinking behind that?
So we've looked at it as mostly an opportunity to raise significant revenue to support the programs, which have their own health benefits. When you're talking about pre-K, you're talking about kids who are going to be healthier. You're talking about community schools, so kids are getting access to additional services, which are going to help their health, whether that be, you know, eye care, dental care, and the like. And you're talking about rec centers, parks, and library improvements. You're also talking about just a healthier population in general. I think it's interesting. Harvard did a study of the Philadelphia sugary drinks tax. And if it were to be implemented, you're talking about, from their projections, 36,000 cases of obesity that are prevented and a net cost savings of almost $200 million in healthcare costs from people drinking less sugary drinks. So although it hasn't been the primary focus, there are health benefits from the tax itself and also from the programs that it'll fund.
I mean, Lauren, I think it needs to be said, there isn't anything particularly healthy about sugary sodas, for instance. I mean, there's nothing in there that is healthy for someone. And there is a lot of sugar that goes into, let's say, a 12-ounce or a 20-ounce sugary soda. What is the argument, I guess, for keeping all this?
Well, I mean, I think the studies that have been cited are overblown. I think when you look at what's actually happened in places that have the tax, like Mexico, what they saw was a very, very negligible decrease in the amount of calories consumed. I think when you look at the trends of obesity have continued to rise as soda consumption has continued to drop. This is not the panacea to the obesity epidemic, the health problems that people are citing. All the health benefits that Jim cited regarding pre-K and parks and rec, you know, if these programs are that important, we should be going after a stable revenue source, not one that is designed to collapse in and on itself.
What would be a stable revenue source from your perspective? Have you looked at that?
Well, I mean, number one, I don't think it's the industry's job to come up with government spending programs. But I think, you know, the idea that we've done everything we can as a city to come up with revenue and our last option is to create a new tax is just absolutely ridiculous. I think when you look at our collection rates on the taxes that are already on the books, they're abysmal. We lag most major cities in our collection rates. The idea that the administration is predicting a 90% compliance rate in the first year for this tax and a 93% compliance rate thereafter is very, very, very generous. I don't think our collection rates are that good on property taxes, and people can't cross the border to avoid those. I think when you look at the way property taxes, we did AVI a couple years ago. We haven't reassessed. Our market values are at an all-time high. We're leaving a ton of money on the table there. That's something that Councilman Doms brought up. Councilwoman Bass basically said that our liquor by the drink tax collection system, she called it an honor system. You know, there's a lot of issues that the city needs to take into consideration in its own house before it starts reaching into taxpayers' pockets. We've maxed out our credit cards, and now we're trying to open a new one.
Go ahead, Jim.
And we'll
get some callers in.
I think this goes to speak to some of the misinformation that might be coming from the other side, considering our real estate tax collection is over 95%, and our liquor by the drink collection is at 97% after the first year. So we are collecting those taxes. And I didn't say that this was the last tax. This was the fairest way to do it because it allows consumers to choose other options. If you were to look at a tax like, you know, the wage tax or the business income and receipts tax, which have been shown to reduce the city's competitiveness, the administration has made a point to continue cuts in those taxes to make the city more competitive. And Robert Inman from Wharton has looked at, you know, a variety of taxes that could have been raised to collect the revenue that we need for these programs. And he labeled this the fairest and the best way to do it, especially compared to the other things that Lauren mentioned.
But why not tax other things that have sugar, for instance, cakes and cookies that come to mind?
So we looked at precedent for a tax of this nature, and this tax is out there and it's revenue. It'd be very, very difficult to implement a tax on all sugar, and very hard for the city to do that, whereas a tax of this nature levied on distributors is a much easier tax to implement. implement and still collect the revenue necessary to support the programs.
Lauren, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think another big question mark around the tax, not only the revenue the lack of revenue it's going to bring in, but the legality, the city's power to even create this tax. Soft drinks are explicitly covered by sales tax. This is something that the state has already decided it is going to tax and get revenue on. You know, Jim talks about not wanting to go to Harrisburg for permission to do something. There's a lot of legal uncertainty whether the city has the authority to do this tax, given that soft drinks are already covered by the sales tax.
Is that true?
And the city solicitor has issued an opinion on this. I think it was actually public through WHYY to look at the two issues that Lauren mentioned, one being the Sterling Act and whether the city has the authority to impose this tax. And the solicitor has said that he believes that the city does have the authority to do this. And also on the Uniformity Act, he doesn't see a concern with that. I'm sure there will be arguments that are made as Lauren has made them. But he feels very strongly about the ability of the city to impose this tax.
I ran across a quote from the head of the NAACP in Philadelphia, Lauren, who said that soda companies target poor people with ads, essentially marketing these sugary drinks in poor communities in Philadelphia. True, not true?
I think that is definitely a line that the administration has been encouraging people to spread. I think the point of that is to distract from the fact that this is a tax on poor people that the administration has proposed.
You're saying that he's saying there's no truth to that?
Well, I can say when you buy in the Philadelphia media market, when you buy Philadelphia, you're buying in a majority-minority market. Right. So I can't speak to the rest of the country. But Philadelphia, we know what our demographics are. When you buy media in Philadelphia, you are buying to a majority-minority market.
You want to respond to that? And then we got a lot of people being hit from both sides on these screens here. Go ahead.
Just last year, there was a study that showed that minority communities, low-income communities, are twice as likely to see advertisements for sugary beverages. And to
like
Lauren's,
billboards, things like that?
To Lauren's point, it gets down to micro-targeting when you're targeting at individual stores and individual neighborhoods. It's not just about buying into a media market. It's about micro-targeting individual populations, which is something that the soda company has done. Soda companies have done to the tune of billions of dollars in profits.
Let me just ask you one thing, and this is 3 cents per ounce, this proposed tax. Is there a wiggle room from the mayor's perspective or from his administration's perspective?
So we've looked at this as the amount of revenue needed to fund these programs. You're talking about 6,500 locally funded pre-K seats, or you're talking about 25 community schools, and you're talking about a $300 million direct city investment in our parks, recreation centers, and libraries. The only way we could do that is if we were to reduce some of those items. So that's why we've said from the beginning that the mayor proposed a budget that funds all of those things, and that's why it's been 3 cents per ounce.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you, and I do want to get some folks into the conversation. That's Jim Engler. He's the deputy mayor for policy and legislation for the city of Philadelphia. Also with us, Lauren Vitas. She's an attorney who represents the Philadelphia Beverage Association and a group called Philadelphians Against the Grocery Tax Coalition. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Brian from Ambler to join us. Brian, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm just curious. You know, I acknowledge that it's not a healthcare debate, but to attack just the sugary drinks, it's hard not to couch that as a health debate. So I'm curious what the administration says about the artificial sweeteners, which have been shown to be as bad, if not worse, than sugary drinks for people's health, and why those are exempt when the sugary drinks aren't.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, so we looked at that, and I take most of my health advice from our health commissioner, Dr. Tom Farley, and he finds that the connection between sugary drinks and obesity and diabetes and negative health impacts to be much stronger than that of artificial sweeteners. I think there's more science to come probably on that, but the connection between negative health impacts and sugary sweetened beverages is just very, very strong, and that's why the tax is imposed on them.
And I'm looking at something. This actually comes from the Philadelphia Inquirer a couple of months ago. Obesity, diabetes, heart disease, gout, tooth decay, erosion, sugar high, healthcare costs, and on from them. I mean, this is something that has attached itself to this whole debate on sugar, taxing sugary drinks and the health costs either way.
Yeah, and we're talking about the health. The mayor came out from day one and said, this isn't about health. This is about revenue. This is another revenue grab.
And interestingly, when this came up a couple of years ago, then Councilman Jim Kinney was not in favor of this tax on sugary drinks.
Yeah, and we looked at it, and the mayor was opposed at the time just because of what the revenue from the tax would go towards, whether it was just to plug a budget hole or whatever. And the programs that are supported now by the revenue from this tax will really go to make a dent in the biggest problem that affects all of us, and that's Philadelphia's 26% poverty rate. And everything that we do as a city should be geared towards that.
Would the mayor be pleased, though, if everyone stopped drinking sugary drinks and had diet sodas and you wouldn't get the money for these programs?
Well, I think as I mentioned, we've been very conservative in our estimates. And again, pointing back to the study that Harvard did, saving almost $200 million in health care costs if people were to reduce consumption by the same amount that we've proposed in the tax and taken into account with our projections would be a huge benefit to Philadelphia.
Go ahead, Lauren.
Yeah, we find that the administration's numbers are way off. There are a couple issues that we don't think that they take into consideration. Number one, they don't factor in the fact that the sales tax is already charged. So the cost that the administration's proposed in their bill is 3 cents per ounce, but what it actually comes down to is about 3 to 4 per ounce. So that's going to affect and drive down the amount of consumption. We also disagree with the assumptions that they use in terms of it's the elasticity, how much people's behavior is going to change. We think that their elasticity calculations are very, very, very conservative. We think that the change in behavior is going to be much starker. And lastly, as I said before, Philadelphia is not an island. People are going to avoid this tax. Jim said consumers have a choice. Yes, they have a choice not to pay the tax by leaving Philadelphia to do their grocery shopping. And that's going to impact not only the tax revenue coming in from the sugar sweetened beverages, but that's going to impact the tax revenue coming from all the other products that folks are going to fill their carts with when they leave the city.
Respond to that, Jim, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Yeah, so that was
comments too.
Any reduction in the sales tax was also taken into account in the projected revenue around the sugar sweetened beverage tax, and that was all taken into account. The impact is going to be minimal, and we feel
you
very
don't think
strongly.
People will leave, go across the border the way many people do in Pennsylvania, getting their liquor in another state.
I don't think it's going to be very significant. And again, we built in a 10% noncompliance rate into the projected revenue. And our health commissioner, who is a significant advocate in the reduction of sugar sweetened beverages, thinks that our estimate of 55% reduction in consumption is significant. When researchers looked at the Berkeley tax, they expected a higher elasticity level. It actually came out lower than even what the city has included in our projections. Mm-hmm. So I think we're being very conservative in both the revenue that's going to be collected from this and in its noncompliance and reduction in consumption.
Let me get Mary from Center City, Philadelphia to join us. Mary, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good.
Thanks for doing this. I have a conflicting concept with my husband. He's for it, and I am totally against this elitist tax. I can't believe how I'm sorry, the gentleman Jim.
Jim Engler.
How he's conflating health and taxes and poverty, how it's all getting enmeshed into one ball of nonsense. I can't believe how he is, trying to force people to, quote, make good choices, and that how the end consumer's not going to have to pay these taxes. I can't believe it. As a retailer, you get a box of whatever that comes in the front door of your store. You total the total cost of that, and then you sell it at a profit. And to say that this is a distributor's tax is really pathetic.
Well, you know what, Mary? You've thrown enough words at Jim Engler. I do want to give him a chance to respond to your call. But she raises some interesting points. She used the word elitist.
Sure. I'll try and respond to as much as I can. So we've talked about the health benefits of the programs that the tax will fund. And that's the most important part to us because it attacks the city's 26% poverty rate, which affects everything that we do, every program that the city implements, the amount of revenue that we have to support other programs. I think that the tax of this nature, because of it's on one type of product, a sugar sweetened beverage, it allows consumers to choose other products if they like, whether it's bottled water or diet drinks or other non-sugar sweetened beverages. So it does provide a choice. I don't know that it's necessarily elitist to try and implement citywide pre-K or to try and implement 25 community schools to affect the poverty rate or invest in our parks, rec centers, and libraries. But that is really the focus of this, is the programs that the revenue will fund.
Let me read a couple of comments, Arnold. I get a response from you. A Facebook comment from Jay. We're already paying a sugary drinks tax. The only difference from Kenny's plan is now the tax would go towards pre-K instead of diabetes. A tweet from Alexis. City Council must pass the sugary drinks tax. It's for the greater good. A tweet from Walt. Sugary drinks have no nutritional value, cause health problems, should be taxed as much as cigarettes, i.e. selling death. Then there is this association between cigarettes and liquor by the drink tax and sugary drinks as well, the kind of sin taxes.
Right. And those vice taxes are those vice taxes are not a great stable source of revenue. You know, I think, again, the programs that the mayor has lined up and would like to spend the revenue on are very worthy. And that's why we should be looking at a stable revenue source, one that's legally on good legal footing, one that is designed to go up over time, not decrease over time. And one that builds these investments not on the backs of our low-income community members, but on a broader base of taxpayers.
I mean, do you see this? We're almost up in a break here, Jim, but do you see this as a vice tax, the way we tax cigarettes and liquor by the drink, for instance?
I mean, I think that the data and the health data shows that drinking sugar-sweetened beverages is not healthy for you. But again, the city, to Lauren's point, the city has been very conservative in our revenue projections to support these important programs. That's what it comes back to. It's not a declining source of revenue. It's there and collectible for the city to support these programs. We think we're being very conservative with it.
And relying on people drinking the sugary drinks and paying the tax.
After a significant reduction in consumption in the first year, and that's what we saw in Mexico. Again, people chose to drink other beverages, and the lower income people drank non-tax beverages, and higher income people maybe will continue to drink sugar-sweetened beverages.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation debating the sugary drinks tax here in Philadelphia with Jim Engler and Lauren Vitas. 1-888-477-9499. A bunch more comments. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Last month, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton weighed in on the proposed tax by Philadelphia's new mayor, Jim Kenney, a sugary drinks tax. As it turned out, Hillary Clinton for the tax, Bernie Sanders opposed to the tax. It was also debated quite vigorously last week in city council. And we are hearing from both sides on this debate from Jim Engler, deputy mayor for policy and legislation for the city of Philadelphia, and Lauren Vitas, an attorney representing the Philadelphia Beverage Association and Philadelphians Against the Grocery Tax Coalition. 1-888-477-9499. A tweet from David. He says, will the tax only apply to fructose and not maltose? Will liquors fall under the fructose content and not beers for maltose?
So the tax does not fall on alcohol and on beer because the state has totally preempted the city from instituting other taxes unless it's authorized by the General Assembly. So it will not fall on that. It is on high fructose corn syrup and on sugar added into other sugar sweetened beverages.
So that's the operative word then, the sugar sweetened beverages. What is the cost of diabetes or the cost of obesity to the city? Will the amount of money a family can save in medical bills, will that outweigh any proposed sugar tax? I mean, that's pretty granular stuff, but...
Yeah, I don't have the exact figures. All I can, again, is point back to this Harvard study that talked about 36,000 fewer cases of obesity and almost $200 million in savings to Philadelphia residents and health care costs related to reduced consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages. So those are the numbers.
Let me get Nick from, looks like, South Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Nick, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, Marty. I actually called you, kind of preempted me, because my suggestion was have a sugar tax more widely distributed on a range of products that add sugar, which is probably most of them, and that's an increasing public health concern, and they would raise more money and be more fairly spread out across the population. I also wanted to mention that I volunteered to help Mr. Engler with criminal justice and reentry policy this summer for free, and he completely blew me off. so he knows everything. And you really should listen to him.
Okay. I'm not sure what you're talking about there, Nick, but let me pick up on what he said earlier. And there was a really interesting article in the New York Times over the weekend about just how much sugar is added to just about every single thing we eat, and it falls under a bunch of different names. And Nick is talking about taxing sugar that is in all foods. Is that something that the Beverage Association would support or has weighed in on at all, Lauren?
I think the Beverage Association, right now, they're the only industry that's being targeted. And as I said before, when you look at just the obesity rates having continued to rise and consumption continue to fall, I think we would welcome any debate about what is actually driving these numbers in this direction.
You want to weigh in on this, on what Jim said, or excuse me, what Nick said, Jim, or what Lauren just said?
Yeah, and we talked about that earlier, and I think that it's extremely difficult to implement a tax on all sugar. And what we see with sugar-sweetened beverages...
You end up taxing everything.
What we see with sugar-sweetened beverages is that they're very much empty calories. If you watch the documentary Fed Up, which Councilman Dom has talked about throughout the budget process, you see the effect of the empty calories that are in sugar and the effect it has on your brain and on the rest of your body. Provides no nutritional value, and that's why it is a product that can be taxed like this.
Let me ask one thing that I read, and I want to understand this better, which is, let's say this passes and there's some money that is going to be invested in pre-K, seats as it's called. Who would run the program? Is it the Philadelphia School District, because they already run pre-kindergarten programs in Philadelphia, or is it another entity?
So what the city has done so far, we've issued an RFP for an intermediary which would contract out for the seats. I think we're in further discussions with the school district about whether that should be the school district that handles that contracting process, considering the work that they do now. There's a discussion that will continue. What we want to do is ensure that we are casting a wide net, specifically with providers. There are plenty of community-based providers throughout the city that are 3- and 4-star quality providers. Providers of pre-K. There are also a number of Star 1 and Star 2 providers which need an additional help, whether it's through professional development or facilities investments, to move into the quality system and create a better system and more accessible to everyone. And that's something that we want to invest in as well.
And making sure the people that are teaching these young kids are qualified and well paid?
Yeah, so the state has a quality rating system, the STAR system, which does outside monitoring and looks at teacher credentials and facilities to make sure that the teachers have the credentials that they say that they have. And the way that we will fund it by layering funding will allow providers to make sure that they match the salaries that are necessary.
Yeah, because there was one concern that people might get paid something like $10 an hour, raising questions about, is that a fair wage, especially for something this important, making sure that young children get a good head start for their schooling?
Yeah, it's obviously not. The city has a $12 minimum wage requirement, and there's also a salary scale. The Commission on Universal Pre-Kindergarten, which that was a match of city the administration and city council, put together a scale of salaries that we would like providers to match.
Anything you want to say in response to that, Lauren?
No, I think council's done a very good job at about digging into this issue of how this money is going to be spent and making sure that there's some accountability in that we are creating quality programs for kids. I think you've seen that last week with the Council President Clark and his latest.
An email from Carol. She says, I think it was PBS that reported that one 12-ounce Coke had the same number of calories as 4 Krispy Kreme donuts. No wonder people become addicted. Maybe Mayor Kenney could compromise on a tax of 1 or 2 cents an ounce, and city council can swallow that. Just using several metaphors there, but raising questions about just the amount of calories in a sugary drink.
I'm not a dietitian, but that just seems really, really
you don't buy that?
One can of soda and 4 donuts.
Krispy Kreme donuts.
Yeah, that seems a little off.
Do you know how many calories in a 12-ounce sugary soda?
I don't.
I believe it's 120.
Yeah, I don't know offhand. I know that those 120 calories are empty calories. Even the donuts, the Krispy Kreme donuts, provide some level of nutrition and the other aspects of it. But the sugar-sweetened beverages provide no nutritional value.
And that's sort of the problem. When you make beverages the devil, you're not doing a good job educating people on their dietary needs. So the idea that someone thinks that eating three Krispy Kreme donuts is healthier than drinking a can of soda is absolutely ludicrous. And I think this lack of education and information out there is one of the reasons why you see the obesity rates continuing to rise. When you make one industry the cause of all our problems, this is what happens.
In fact, if I could ask maybe Emily or someone can look up how many calories in a 12-ounce soda, and then we can get to the bottom of this. Let me get Paul from, looks like Point Breeze. Paul, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I can answer your question right now. There are 180 calories and 45 grams of sugar in a 12-ounce soda.
Okay.
The problem that you guys are talking about is that it's not, when you drink a soda, it's not the same as eating something. That, because of the process in which it's been made, those calories hit you all at once. It's not the same as eating. Your body doesn't have a chance to take the metabolic processes that it would with food, which is why soda is different from a nutritional standpoint.
Fair enough.
That actually isn't even the reason I'm calling.
Okay, go ahead.
It was that when people buy sodas, they tend to buy them in a different way than we're associating with a normal product. In Point Breeze, there are no grocery stores. No one's stocking up on items, buying cases, or going to some sort of suburban area. They're getting a soda at the corner store, or they're getting lunch and they're getting a soda with the lunch.
Right.
So to say that these taxes are going to change people's grocery bill, I think that all the consumption isn't the same and that there needs to be something to differentiate that. At the same time, we're all talking about what a perfect, you know, this isn't the best solution. It's a revenue fund that might run out. This is government policy in America. It's never going to be perfect.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Is this a question that is this a step in the right direction?
Okay,
is this
I hear
be
you.
Better for Philadelphia.
And I know Lauren wants to respond to your call. Paul, thanks for calling.
Yeah, and I think Paul brought up a great point where people in Point Breeze aren't going to get into their cars and drive to Montgomery County to do their grocery shopping. What we're going to see is that the folks who can afford to leave the city to do their grocery shopping will, and the folks who can't, we're going to be forced to pay the tax.
And they're not going to say, you know, well, maybe I'll get a sugar-free drink.
I don't think we're going to see, I don't know. I think that's actually a good question. We don't know exactly how behavior is going to get changed. So if they do switch over to a non-tax beverage, that's a hit on the mayor's tax plan. And if they continue to drink the beverage, then this tax is being borne by low-income members of our community.
And people drink gobs of soda, so a 20-ounce of soda is not that unusual. That's 60 additional cents.
And that's, again, if the whole tax is passed on. I think the larger issue, to Paul's point, is the lack of access in a lot of our communities to healthier choices and to other products. And I wish some of the 10 to $15 to $20 million that the American Beverage Association is spending against this tax and in ads against this tax would go to support some other options for people in a lot of our minority communities where they have made billions of dollars over the years.
Go ahead, Lauren. I've heard that argument before.
No, and I mean, it's – and the mayor – the advocates for the administration have their own C4 spending millions of dollars as well. I mean, it's again trying to change the conversation to make it about big bad soda rather than proposing a regressive tax that's going to be borne by low-income members of our community.
Do you think of it as big bad soda?
I think if you look, I read a book, Marion Nestle.
Marion Nestle, yeah.
Soda Politics. And you look at the way the advertising has been targeted and micro-targeted to specific communities, the way that they have lobbied the FDA for certain protections. I think that there is some truth to that. I think there's a council member last week at the hearing that talked about how we might be getting ready for a soda settlement in the same way that we had the cigarette,
like
tobacco settlement at the state level, where there's going to be reports of the knowledge of the issues related to sugar-sweetened beverage consumption.
Let me read an email from Tony. This is for you, Lauren. Tony says, I was interested in the anti-tax case until I heard they're constantly referring to this as a grocery tax. It's a tax on sugary drinks. To say otherwise is to try to manipulate the least educated consumers.
And I sort of hit this earlier in the show, why we feel very comfortable calling it a grocery tax, because it is not just about soda, which the other side has consistently called it a soda tax. And the fact is that there is, you know, the mayor's own words, there is a chance that this is going to be spread throughout all retail products. So get spread throughout all grocery items. You know, it's going to be on your grocery bill.
I know we touched on this earlier. Quick response, Jim, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Yeah, so it is only on sugar-sweetened beverages, beverages that are sweetened with sugar, diet drinks, bottled water, other things that you can buy in a grocery store would not be taxed. And I think what the mayor was referring to is the amount of products that are sold in a number of grocery right. stores, and this being a small subset of all of the products that are sold in grocery stores, and that there it leaves a choice for people to choose other options if they don't want to pay the tax.
But let's say there's a tax on the distributor. They then, you know, increase the cost to the local grocery store. Then the grocery store person says, well, I'm going to spread this out over everything that I sell within this store. Again, you might lose some of the revenue for the sugary tax. Because if they're taxing milk, they're not taxing the sugary beverages.
Well, the beverages are taxed at the distributor level, so that's where the tax will be levied, and the distributor
and
they're responsible.
The ones that are pay it.
They're responsible for remitting the tax to the city under the proposed legislation.
Okay, fair enough.
And I think that's an important point why the administration keeps calling it a distributor tax, because as I said before, there are serious legal questions about whether the administration has the ability to do this tax because it's already subject to a sales tax. And so what they're trying to do is move it up the line in the supply chain and basically say, oh, this isn't a sales tax because it's paid by the distributor level. And the fact remains that the size of the tax, doubling the cost of the product, there is no way a distributor can absorb this tax without passing along the majority of it to the retailers and eventually the consumers. It's a sales tax.
Yeah, I mean, the two things that significantly differentiate it from a sales tax is where it's levied, obviously, on the distributor and also on the way it's levied, which is on the amount of the drink and not on the price. A sales tax is, by definition, on the price of the item, and this would be a tax on the size and the volume of the product, and it's at a different point in the distribution chain. So that's why it's just simply not a sales tax.
It is interesting, though, Lauren, that this tax has gotten some national attention, even beyond Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders weighing in on it. And does the Beverage Association see this as, if it passes in Philadelphia, then this will open the floodgates to other cities and they'll come up with their own sugary drinks tax?
I can't speak for the American Beverage Association. I can only speak for the Philadelphia Beverage Association. And, you know, we were against this tax in 2010. We were against this tax in 2011. It's a wildly unpopular, legally questionable tax. And, you know, the fact that we continue to come back to the conversation, I think, says more about the city's ability to manage its fiscal situation, especially in this case where the mayor's made it clear this isn't about health. So I think, you know, every municipality has different reasons. You know, Philadelphia is not Berkeley, California. So, you know, whether you continue to see this, I don't know if that is, again, a reflection of, you know, tightening the belts in municipal finance or some other reason.
We're almost out of time here. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you've already seen it in San Francisco and Oakland and in other cities that are attempting this. It's, the Beverage Association calls it a grocery tax everywhere. I told Lauren, I think the Oakland No Grocery Tax website is a lot nicer than the Philadelphia No Grocery Tax website, but it's the same information, the same misinformation everywhere, and it must poll well in order for that to be the message.
Well, and is council have, what, a month to decide one way or the other?
Yeah, so the last council session is scheduled for June 16th, so we hope to have some resolution before then.
Well, my thanks to the two of you for coming in together and talking about this issue. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Jim Engler, Deputy Mayor for Policy and Legislation for the City of Philadelphia. Lauren Vitas, an attorney who represents the Philadelphia Beverage Association and Philadelphians Against the Grocery Tax Coalition. A lot of people that wanted to join the conversation, go to whyy.org/radiotimes. And you can download a podcast of the show. And you can also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll